And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is potpourri. Each of my guests has an interesting subject, no two of which are related. My next guest is a former Air Force pilot who spent time flying in commercial aviation. He'll take us down the back alleys of aviation from his latest book on airline safety, Rogue Aviator. And if you want to join in the conversation or ask a question, you can always call us at 639-0008. Ace Abbott was born and raised on a farm in upstate New York. He entered the U.S. Air Force in 1965 and became an F-4 Phantom pilot based in the Far East. Upon leaving the military, Ace began his civil aviation career as a Learjet charter pilot, corporate pilot, and he spent the last 22 years as a Boeing 727 captain. He retired in 2004. During his career, he visited 44 countries with 14 different airlines. Ace is the author of the brand new book, The Rogue Aviator, in the back alleys of aviation. Joining us from upstate New York, how are you doing today, Ace?
I'm doing great, Bill. It's just a wonderfully beautiful autumn day up here, and I wish I could be out flying, but I'm looking forward to chatting with you and your listeners also.
Well, I appreciate your taking time away from flying to be here and being my guest. Now, I want to dive right into it because flying remains the safest means of mass transportation that's out there. I mean, there are two ways of looking at it. You can either look at the total number of fatalities or the fatalities per passenger mile, but either way you look at it, flying appears to be much more safe than driving in your car or even riding on a train. So why raise the specter that flying is becoming less safe both here in the United States and abroad?
Well, the situation is the many of the recent airplane accidents, particularly the fatal accidents, have been partially caused by tired pilots in a cockpit. The most recent domestic accident that occurred in Buffalo, New York, the very well publicized Continental 3407 operated by Colgan Air. The two pilots in that airplane were extremely fatigued. They probably hadn't been in a bed in over 30 hours plus. They'd only had catnaps and crew lounges, and cockpit voice recording tapes after the accident revealed that they were very, very tired, and that created to the dysfunctionality of handling the airplane when the emergency situation occurred. And many of the accidents in recent years, pilot fatigue has been a precursor. Now, during the accident investigation, the NTSB will state the pilot flew the aircraft into the ground, therefore it's a pilot error. However, the pilot flew the aircraft into the ground because he was somewhat debilitated and he made some bad decisions. In many cases, hard to quantify, of course, but in many cases because he and or she was very, very tired. And the subject of tired pilots in a cockpit has really been the, we'll call it the, kind of like the crazy aunt that you have to put in the attic when company comes because she's kind of embarrassing. And that's pretty much how it's been looked at by the aviation community.
Well, it was
supposed to be addressed on August 1st. There were supposed to be major changes made in the domestic flight regulations, duty time and flight time limitations, but unfortunately those changes got put on hold, and they are now sitting up in the Washington at the OMB Office of Management and Budget, because the determination was that if these changes were implemented, which would allow the pilots to get more sleep, it would cost the airlines in the vicinity of $2.7 billion per year in operating cost, since they would have to have more pilots on duty, on call, and available to fly. But yes, Bill, but back to your premise, it is incredibly safe. Our aviation in this country is almost the safest in the world, but it is being degraded quite frequently as a result of the tired pilots in the cockpit.
Fair enough, and that's a fair statement. It should be noted, too, that within the United States, we have a fairly impeccable record, notwithstanding the Continental crash that you just talked about. Outside of the United States, ACE, it's a completely different situation. If you take a look at airlines such as Aeroflot, the Russian flag carrier for Russia, or if you look at Garuda Air, which is the air carrier of Indonesia, even Air India, the air carrier for India itself, their records are not as spotless as they are here in the United States. Comment on the differences between the regulations inside the U.S. and outside of the U.S., if you will.
Well, it varies significantly from country to country, and the three areas that you mentioned, of course, Aeroflot in particular, and all of Russia. What's happened in Russia, of course, since the breakdown of the Soviet Union, is capitalism is running rampant there. As a result, now there are startup airlines, small startup airlines throughout Russia, and they're underfunded and mismanaged, and they've hired inexperienced, poorly trained people. It's just chaos over there. They're crashing airplanes like crazy in Russia, as they're doing in India. It's the same problem in India. The airline business is burgeoning, and as a result, they don't have enough qualified, experienced people to fly these airplanes, and their accident rate is just absolutely horrific. But on the other hand, if you go to Europe, Scandinavia, UK, the airlines operating in that area are very, very safe because the restrictions, the regulations, and particularly regarding training and flight and duty time are more demanding. About 12 years ago, I took a job flying with a airline based in Copenhagen, Denmark, and we were flying cargo for TNT Freight, and their training was infinitely more demanding than any of the 727 training that I had done in this country, and they were dotting the I's, crossing the T's, but most significantly, they had flight and duty time rules that were much more restrictive than the ones in the U.S., and for instance, where in the U.S. you could do 16 hours of duty, over there you could only do 12 or 14, depending upon what time you went to work. And in some circumstances, if you went to start your flying on the back side of the clock, say after 11 p.m. in the evening, you could only work a 9-hour day. And so it was, it was more restrictive, basically.
That is remarkable. And you're lighting up the phones. My guest is Ace Abbott. Ace, we have a caller. David is calling in. David from Woodlawn. How are you today?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. No, it's good morning, actually. Sorry, we're in the same time zone.
Well, welcome, David. What's your question for Ace?
May I please ask two questions of Mr. Ace Abbott?
Sure, fire away.
Okay, Mr. Abbott, I'm a former upstate New York country boy myself, and I've got your book in front of me, your latest edition. And my first question is this. The cover is very attractive, and I'd like to know why you placed an airplane upside down at the top of this book. Does it have anything? How does that connect to the rogue that you have in your title?
I believe the very creative person that designed that cover wanted to do a little quasi-surrealistic approach, and I think he perceived that upside-down, somewhat obscure old DC-3. I actually did used to fly DC-3s way back very briefly. But I believe he threw that in there add a little to the rogue element, if you will.
All right, so it was an aesthetic thing. David, you had a second question for Ace?
Yes, Mr. Abbott, you talk about pilot fatigue, even in current situations. Have you yourself ever slept during your own flight time?
It's documented in my book, of course, and I confess to the having slept in the vicinity of 2,000 hours. I have approximately 18,000 hours of flight time, and close to 2,000 hours of that time on the flight deck is either asleep or involved in at least a mini catnap, and that was out of pure necessity. It was actually in the interest of flight safety because if I were well-rested, by sleeping en route when there's not very many duties to take care of on the flight deck, and I also had, of course, two other pilots with me, the co-pilot and the flight engineer, I would then be well rested when I got to up to Chicago O'Hare, for instance, and had to fly the approach down to 200 feet and blowing snow and gusty crosswinds and a slick runway. So that half hour, an hour catnap I did en route from Aruba or Montego Bay or wherever I had come from actually enhanced enhanced the safety factor. And interestingly enough, several years ago, NASA was given $11 million to do a study regarding just that concept. And that concept was, of course, to have the pilots take scheduled alternate cat naps en route on the longer flights, particularly those overseas flights that are several hours or the backside of the clock flights, like, for instance, the red eyes that go from California to the East Coast. And NASA studies came up with a very clear conclusion, and that was that it would be highly advantageous to have one or both of the pilots do the sleep en route in order that they're both well-rested when they get to destination. And interestingly enough, that was pigeonholed by the FAA. It was never implemented. However, I believe if you were in the cockpit of most of the red eyes that leave California at 11 and get back to the east 5-6 hours later, you'd find that there was probably some catnapping in those cockpits.
David, that was a great question. Thanks so much for being a loyal listener, and thanks for calling in with your questions. Ace, I want to get back to you and talk about this a little bit further, if we can, please, because the whole idea of a pilot catching a catnap when there is one or more fellow crew members awake in the cockpit doesn't concern me too much as a flyer. But I guess my question for you is this. These new jet airplanes literally, in good weather, can take themselves off on autopilot and land themselves on autopilot. So how difficult or how dangerous is it if the pilot does catch a quick catnap in the cockpit while the plane is virtually flying itself?
It's not at all dangerous. And as long as you have a qualified, experienced pilot in the cockpit with you in a pilot seat, sitting there with the controls in front of them, that can take control of the aircraft. If something catastrophic happens immediately, he can immediately assume control of the aircraft. Should you have, for instance, a rapid depressurization or some kind of very, very rare anomaly of a flight control hard over or something along those lines. So it is actually enhancing safety to have that captain, for instance, sleeping for 30 or 45 minutes, because when he gets to the destination, although the autopilot can fly the airplane right down to touchdown, the rest of the story is there's a lot of monitoring that must be done, and there's a lot of mental agility and awareness, high-level cockpit awareness that the pilot has to maintain to get that airplane down to the runway. And then the rest of the story is when it's on the runway, the autopilot is no longer flying it in most cases. Now the pilot must take over and keep the airplane on the runway and take care of braking and so forth. And, of course, as far as takeoff goes, the autopilot will really not be implemented in takeoff till after gear and flap retraction is when normally the autopilot is engaged.
And that's typically at about 500 to 1,000 feet above the surface?
That's correct, Bill.
Okay.
That's
all right.
Correct.
Great.
Yep.
My guest is Ace Abbott. He's the author of the book Rogue Aviator in the Back Alleys of Aviation. And Ace, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, Rogue Aviator?
Well, primarily I want them to understand that there is what I will refer to as the other side of the tracks in aviation. And you notice the subtitle, In the Back Alleys of Aviation. And this refers to employment or with those companies that shall I say are less than scrupulous, that perhaps put safety secondary behind the bottom line profit. And it's the old Harvard School of Business mantra: maximum utilization of human resources. And many of these smaller airlines will push the envelope the safety envelope to the very edge. And in many instances, they'll ask them to fly airplanes that are marginally maintained, and particularly they'll ask them to fly ridiculously long duty hours. And I have had, on several instances, I have had to call the flight scheduler or the chief pilot and say, pardon me, sir, but we can't fly this additional leg that was just assigned to us. We are too tired to fly. In many instances, with many of the smaller airlines, the charter airlines, for instance, this would immediately get the flight crew fired. And I make the statement in my book that if a management person should coerce a pilot or flight crew to fly an airplane when they're too tired, that should be cause for criminal action against that management, because they would be forcing that pilot or flight crew into a very hazardous situation.
Yes.
Because a pilot or flight crew will not declare themselves unsafe to fly because of fatigue until they're seriously fatigued.
And it's a very serious allegation. My guest has been Ace Abbott, author of the book Rogue Aviator in the Back Alleys of Aviation. Ace, if people want to learn more about you, where would you quickly direct them to go in about 10 seconds?
The website, 3Ws.TheRogue.com.
Thanks so much, Ace, for being my guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the